Hey everybody, welcome back to The Blind Spot. I'm your host, the blind man, Jason Pulaski. And this is episode 4, if my count is right. And if I can't count to 4, that's very bad. So, I'm back with no guest again. Glad to be here, though, as always. You know, whenever I start a podcast, I think how wild it is that such a thing is even possible. I just think back to when I was a kid, like 20 years ago, and even 15 years ago, and how, like, the only way that you could talk like this is if you somehow finagled yourself into a radio deal. Guys like, you know, Howard Stern or like, I don't know, people like that with long-form shows. I mean, other than that, it was like 20 minutes at a time on TV, and that was the only way, you know, aside from books, that you could really disseminate your views. And, like, books have logistical hurdles. This is just talking, just like, you know, just like those old radio shows. And it's just wild to me that everybody can do it now. And for years I had a podcast, and I'm sorry, for years I wanted a podcast, and now I have one. And now that I have one, I really don't know what to do with it. I'm like, what the fuck do I talk about? And then I think, who gives a shit what I think, you know? But nevertheless, here we are. It's too late to turn back now. I paid my $14 a month. God damn if I'm not going to fucking get my money's worth now. So here we are, episode 4, and no guests. And the reason is because they've been harder to come by than I thought. And I've been hitting up friends. You know, I'm going to have to go even more low-hanging fruit and try and guilt family next. But I've been hitting up my friends, and, like, a lot of them don't want to go on. And the reasons why are interesting. One of my buddies just had anxiety. Apparently, he was on somebody else's podcast and was uncomfortable. You know, naturally, nobody would ever be uncomfortable on my podcast. You know, I'm a good host that puts motherfuckers at their ease, you know, as naturally as I breathe. But that being said, he was uncomfortable. You know, that's fine. Anxiety, whatever. You know, but the other people I asked were interesting because the reasons they didn't want to do it had to do with opinions. One of my buddies didn't want to be on my podcast because of my opinions. I got to sneeze. Yeah. You know, unprofessional. I know. I apologize. So one of my friends didn't want to be on my podcast because of my opinions. The comment that he made was like, you know, maybe your opinions on transgender people. Now he didn't elaborate. So I don't know if he meant that he didn't want to be on a platform I was on because I have opinions on transgender people that he disagrees with. I don't know if he meant that my opinions would be controversial to his employers, you know. It's unclear. I do suspect, though I don't know, that if I had the opposing opinions on trans people, he'd have no problem. Which, you know, well, we'll get into it. My other buddy was worried about his own opinions. He was worried about that he would express an opinion that would then get him into some type of trouble because, you know, like he'd said something controversial. The guy has a small business. You know, again, I understand the worry. And, like, you know, I have a stupid little podcast, so I would never want somebody to come on here and jeopardize how they eat by saying something dumb on my show or me saying something dumb or something I believe that caused a fracas or a ruckus somehow. But I mean, that being said, I want to dive into this stuff because I've been thinking a lot since then about opinions and like, sort of the current environment of opinions and, like, how people react to other people and all this stuff. So, I mean, my thing is that I hope if I can ever finagle or, you know, hoodwink or beg or borrow a guest on my show that I have plenty of people who have plenty of opinions that are vastly different from mine. I'm a really opinionated person. So, you know, talking to people with strong convictions that aren't mine, it's good for me. It helps me, like, strengthen my own opinions or change my mind or just have a good argument or whatever. But, I mean, you know, my thing is, like, in life and on this show, it's like big tent is the idea. It's like there are a couple of opinions that are beyond the pale for me. Like, you know, I don't need to hear about how a Ku Klux Klan member, a Klansman, you know, justifies, like, his racism. I'm not interested in the argument because it's so wrong. I'm just not interested. It's, like, wrong, and the claim the Klansman makes is so out there and so dogmatic that I just don't see the need to engage. It's kind of like, in general, if I'm talking to really committed Christians, I have no problem with people of faith, but, like, I don't want to argue you out of your Christianity because I can't. Like, it's just, you're committed, you're not changing your mind, and, like, so some arguments are not worth having for the purposes of changing minds. Some are worth having, although you know no mind will be changed. Some are just a good exchange of ideas. But anyway, but what I've noticed a lot, and I try and stay out of it, but it seems to me that in America and, like, in other parts of the Western world, although I really can't speak as well for those parts, you know, we're really starting to get very tribal in our opinions and, like, very polarized. Like, you know, and we self-polarize and we, like, self-select echo chambers and we kind of, like... And, like, a lot of times when people are arguing online with other people, they aren't really in a good faith argument with the other person. They're, like, trying to dunk for their own team, which is, you know, so you'll be like, I want lower taxes because whatever. And the point isn't to convince people who want higher taxes or the same taxes that they should want lower taxes. The point is to make all the other people watching you who want lower taxes go, oh, yeah, look at that. That was great. Yeah, sick burn or whatever fucking people say instead of that now. So, you know... The discourse is bad, is what I'm saying. A lot of it is really bad. A lot of it is like shouting across a chasm with no attempt to understand and just a bunch of bullshit. And I mean, look, you know, it doesn't always mean like, you know, the expectation, I'm going to hack, sorry. The expectation is not always that you're going to change people's minds. I mean, people with committed, well-thought-out beliefs, you know, are not going to change their minds easily. But, you know, I always like to hear people because I think that I'd like to keep their opinions in my head for later, you know, because maybe they'll be useful to me at some other time. And I just find it a very good thing to exchange opinions. Now, so there's tribalism is one thing. So there's a big polarization as far as like, you know, if you are pro undocumented immigrant, for example, it's like there's a couple other opinions that you might also share. Like, you know, you're probably against the death penalty. You're probably for higher taxes. I mean, like, not even that this is true. So it's not even that that's a true thing, but it's perceived to be that way. So if you're a pro-gun rights in the United States, if you're like, I mean, let's call it adamantly Second Amendment, we might assume that you're also for low taxes and also for the death penalty and against undocumented immigrants and stuff like that. So now, this doesn't mean that everybody who holds one of these opinions holds the rest of them. And that's actually part of the problem. Part of the problem is that, you know, you state one opinion and other people will feel comfortable thinking that they can predict, you know, 19 other things that you think when they might or might not be able to based on that opinion. But... so that's one thing. And so, in addition to the polarization though, there's also a tendency to like pile on in a weird way. So, I mean, I'm not telling anybody, I don't know why I'm talking to people. I don't know why I have to explain this whole situation, like I'm talking to aliens, but anyway, this is how I architected it in my head. So here we go. You know, so like there's a situation where somebody says something, and then, like, a person who doesn't like that thing sees the thing that was said and passes that along through their social networks to other people who won't like it. And then, like, a lynching or pile on or, you know, online mob mentality begins where it's like, you know, like the people, like, who don't like the thing shame and, like, you know, name maybe isn't doxing or, like, you know, they just kind of, like, just attack a person for stating an opinion. And, like, you know, people get fired and, like, all this shit, you know. Stuff happens, people, like, if they're famous, they lose endorsements, or, like, But if they're not famous, it's definitely worse because, you know, it has the potential to really turn their life upside down for, like, a thing they said. And, like, I'm not trying to, like, say this is a left-right thing or a right-left thing. It just happens now. It's a thing that happens. And so, like, people get really, you know, as a result of both the tribalism and of the, like, you know, mob mentality type of deal, and I guess also because, like, we're still adjusting to being in public online, if that's how we choose to be, you know, people become very resistant and hesitant to state their opinions. Like, it was wild to me, my buddy who said, you know, I don't want to come on your show because I might state an opinion people don't like. And 10 years later, I'm running a business and, like, you know, people are going to see it and get pissed. And, like, I'm not objecting. Like, he's right. That could totally happen. But it's still it's crazy that that's now a concern we have. And I find it very regrettable. And, you know, it got me thinking, like, I started the show because I'm an opinionated. I started it for a bunch of reasons. But it got me thinking, like, you know, how do I feel about expressing my own strong opinions about things? And, like, honestly, I'm a little hesitant, too. You know, partly because it's polarizing, partly because, you know, if you don't talk about your, say, political opinions, they do not polarize people. My favorite story, well, yeah, it's always, and you never know what people think until they tell you. So, like, I remember watching this guy named Joe Scarborough back in 2006. He had this show called Scarborough Country. And, like, back then, now he's a good guy. But back then, he was, I guess he was a good guy back then, too. But back then, he was a fairly rabid Republican in the, like, oh, I don't even know what mold it was because I didn't follow politics close back then. But I was sitting having dinner with my cousin, who I'd never really talked politics with. We were both 17 or 18. And Scarborough went on this stem winder of a rant. You know, it went on for 2 or 3 minutes. La, 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 big, strong statements. And, like, you know how talk show hosts can be. And when it was done, and they cut to commercial, and I just remember saying to my cousin, that was some crazy shit. And he goes, sounded pretty good to me. And I was like, oh, shit, I guess you don't know what anyone thinks until you ask, you know. So there is a thing of, like, if I don't state my opinions, I have a podcast, you know, I think, like, oh, I can get the widest possible audience because I haven't said how I feel about illegal immigration or how I feel about, you know, the Second Amendment or the death penalty or Israel-Gaza or any of these, or Biden or Trump or any. And by the way, I'll just say now, Trump should be on trial for treason. I mean, that's common. So I don't like Trump. But anyway, the point is, there's a temptation to not state my opinions on controversial subjects, you know, especially while I'm super unknown, so that I can, like, lure everybody in. Like, oh, that guy doesn't talk about that. I like that guy. And then just slowly leak him out, you know? But then, like, I was sort of inspired by just the reaction I got from my one buddy. It's like, you know, am I afraid to say what I think about stuff? Like, no, the answer has to be no. You know, nobody can take anything away from me. I'm unemployed. What the fuck? Fuck them. Like, I don't have anything. Really, other than my thoughts, you know. And so, in a minute, I'm going to talk about some of the shit I think. But before that, I just want to say that I think that, like, you know, sorry about that. In a democracy, you know, engaging in good faith and carefully in the public square, which is now mostly on the internet, is super important. Like, you know, if you think X, Y, or Z about health insurance, you know, or about free speech, or about, oh, I don't know, you know, redistricting in your state, or bail reform, or whatever the hell it is, you know, or high-speed rail, any of the, I mean, like, the point is there are hundreds of issues. You know, if you have a opinion that you feel strongly about and that you thought about, you should probably say it. Because if you don't say it, you just cede ground to people who are willing to talk. And then you're just out of the conversation, you know, and you're like, instead you kind of click like on things that you agree with or whatever, but you're not, it's better if you're just stating your own opinion. I mean, better for the country and probably for you as well. And this holds true in all the democracies I know about. But I think in the United States somehow, we're sort of, two bad things have happened. There's a hesitancy and a kind of fear on just stating your opinion. For the reasons I already like talked about. Nobody wants some crazy mob of people like blowing their social media up because they said something. You know, I mean, and if you have a real job, maybe you get fired or, you know, like, all, so now you're like, it's a bunch of public shit going on. You know, but also because of the way the discussions happen now, where, like, I'm going to give you some of my opinions and, you know, agree or disagree. It's like when there's a disagreement, a lot of times there's this attitude of like, yeah, you go. And then like to the people that disagree with you, it's like, hey, fuck you. You know, it's not about like, hey, let's talk it out. Let's like, you know, let's argue. Let's like fucking really get into it. It's just kind of like, hey, fuck you. You know, you're a fascist. You're a communist or whatever. It's just real kind of stupid shit. So, there's actually a good framework I can use to talk about, some of the things I think. I mean, it's one news story that allows me to do it all. So I don't know how much you follow politics. If you don't follow them much, you know, I feel like, well, good on you and bad on you at the same time because it's gross. But also, you know, democracy isn't a spectator sport. That being said, the Congress, the Senate, and the House are trying to come up with a bill because there are competing wants right now. The Democrats are adamant that, Joe Biden has, that's the president in case you didn't know, Joe Biden has asked for a bunch of foreign aid money, about $60 billion to Ukraine, about $30 billion to Israel, and maybe $20 billion to Taiwan. I forgot to look these numbers up before the show because we run an unprofessional shop here. It's not true. I just forgot. But anyway, it's $120 billion in total, and it's foreign aid. Or it's $105 billion, it's foreign aid. It's for Israel and Ukraine and Taiwan. All countries that we're backing against authoritarian threats. What happened was Biden asked for the money, and the Republicans said, like, you know, no. We're not going to do it unless you give us what we want on border security, on the southern border. So the Republicans said, like, you know, and this is, now I'm talking about the Senate. The Republicans in the Senate said, all right, we are, many of us are for the foreign aid you want. We are for Ukraine aid, we're for, and they're definitely for Israeli aid, and they're pretty hot on aiding Taiwan too, because that pokes China in the eye. So these Republicans were like, okay, we're for the aid you want, but like because we can't get it any other way, in exchange for passing the aid you want, we want changes to the immigration system on the southern border. So every month right now, the Border Patrol apprehends 210,000 on average illegal crossings from, you know, Mexico to the United States. And most of those people are paroled into the country, which means they are caught and then released. They are given a court date years away from now and told, please appear for your court date, you know, let's say in 2027, and we'll see you then. Until then, you know, hang loose and have a good time. And if you need a bus ticket somewhere, we'll buy it for you. Pardon me, we'll buy it for you. So, you know, for anyone following the issue, and for those who aren't, like, the Texas and Florida governors have been doing a kind of stunt where they take buses of recently arrived undocumented immigrants or immigrants seeking asylum, and then they put them on buses willingly, and then they bus them to blue states, to Democrat states who are sanctuary states. They do that to make the point that, like, hey, you wouldn't be sanctuary states if you had to deal with what we have to deal with. But at the same time, you know, immigrants from those same categories are making their way to those states on their own anyway. New York is an attractive destination for illegal immigrants, as an example, or for immigrants in general. I mean, like, I don't know if an asylum seeker is technically an illegal immigrant. It's unclear to me, sort of. So anyway, the point is, it's 210,000 a month on average. Like, and it costs, it's so now I'm going to state an opinion. That's insane. That whole thing is insane. Like, I am, first of all, I'm pro legal immigration. I, as an example, we naturalized, which means created 1 million new citizens in fiscal year 2022. It's like a million and change. And I'm in favor of doing that every single year. And I could even be, I could see that go as high as 2 million people, 2.5 million people every year, new citizens. Maybe as high as 3 million, you know. It's possible. I would have to know the contours of the deal and stuff, but I'm not opposed. I'm by default, I'm in favor of legal immigration to this country. Most people who came here as immigrants. Like, you know, everybody who founded this nation was an immigrant. You know, every president we've had has been an immigrant. I mean, in the sense that their ancestors were not here until they came here. So, you know, I mean, you were probably an immigrant. But, you know, at the same time, I have no interest in illegal immigration at all. So you know, the governor of Texas put buoys on the Rio Grande, like, to slow the flow of illegal immigrants, you know, and, like, you know, people, certain states want to put razor wire on their borders and stuff. Like, I'm totally cool with all that. Only because the feds have just abdicated responsibility. You know, the situation at the border right now is that it's basically an open border. If you walk here and walk across, you get to stay. Probably. Most people aren't immediately sent back, and I am absolutely against that. Now, I need to be very clear here. Like, I don't want to put kids in cages, and I don't want to separate families as a deterrent so they stop showing up. But, you know, if you cross the border and we find you and you haven't done it in a legal way and you have not specifically asked for asylum, I want us to detain you and I want us to send you home immediately. You know, I want us to do it gently and humanely, but home you go. You know, if we find you have come here from Senegal, back to Senegal you go. Venezuela, back to Venezuela, you know. Nicaragua, back to Nicaragua you go. Guatemala, same shit. Back you go. India, goodbye, you know, because I don't, you know, I'm just not interested in, let me see, okay. The thing is, I'm not opposed to granting people asylum if I think the system is controlled. Like, if I think that we vet everyone carefully and carefully evaluate asylum claims, and nobody is being released on 7-year humanitarian paroles to just kind of walk around and chill, I'd be fine with asylum seekers. You know, some country, you know, can't handle its own shit, lights itself on fire, causes like a violent civil war, or, you know, people abdicate their responsibilities. And there's a coup, and, like, it's successful, and now there's a dictatorship that hates, you know, I don't know, Catholics or gay people or darker-skinned people or whichever grouping it is, and people, you know, come here and plead for asylum. I'm interested in giving them asylum, you know. But that's a smaller category of people than the entire number of people who just walk here. And I don't want to give asylum just because a country is a little more violent than our country is. I mean, when I talk about asylum, I'm talking about either absolutely bigoted states, you know, like states that, for example, will kill you if you're gay. You know, if they find out you're gay, they jail you or kill you and they beat the shit out of you or, like, whatever, you know, or states that kill an ethnic group like that. So there are asylum grounds, and I'm fine with that, but, you know, that is a tiny fraction of the situation we're in now, which is total insanity to me for a number of different reasons. I mean, I don't want us to pay to help these people with our tax money. We owe $33 trillion. We can't afford to do this shit. Like, you know, we spend, say, like in New York, New York State, we're going to spend $5 billion in the next year or two feeding and housing this mob of immigrants that's shown up over the last year. It's 113,000 immigrants over the last year have just arrived in New York. And, like, to take care of them, to educate their children, to pay their hospital bills, to house them, to whatever them, you know, costs a great deal of money. And it's money I want to spend on American citizens instead of, you know, foreigners who've just arrived here begging. I'm not interested in doing that on a huge scale. It's trillions of dollars. I mean, we have miserably failing schools all over this country. 30% of our schools, 40% are below snuff, not up to code, you know? I mean, like, we're 27th in math and 28th in reading. I don't have the exact statistic in front of me, but it's very close to that. You know, we have plenty of work to do here. We should be number one on every single metric that you can measure. That's what I want. Education, you know, like quality of roads, you know, quality of hospitals, you know, life expectancy, you know, food, like FDA, you know, food standards as far as like, you know, if it's chicken, it's chicken. I don't know how to say exactly what I'm trying to say, but like, you know, I want us to be number one in every possible metric you can measure. And if we're number two or number 40 in something, I want us to spend the money and the time to get to number one because that benefits us. I want us to, if our preschools are bad, I want to improve them. In areas of our country where violent crime is high, I want to spend the money and the resources to lower it. There's plenty of shit I want to do for this country to make it better, and all that stuff costs money. And it doesn't grow on trees, you know. And so I want to spend that money on us. And this illegal immigrant shit is a huge diversion. It's a huge money pit. And it, like, you know, I don't want to do it. You know, I also don't want to just let people walk in. I don't give a shit what's going on in your country. I don't care why you left. I understand that you left. Like, I would leave. If I lived in South or Central America, I would leave and try and sneak into the United States. 100%. Who would want to live there when you can live here? I mean, or in Canada, you know, I mean, I would just try and get out of where I was and go to somewhere more orderly and less chaotic. I understand that, and they have my sympathy. But that's not how you make foreign, that's not how I make foreign policy decisions, you know, as far as what I think the country should do. So I don't want a bunch of walk-ins here. I want that border closed. I mean, right now, the thing is, I used to think the phrase open borders was a huge Republican exaggeration, but now I don't think that. We basically have open borders, and that's insane. I don't want that. Now, I don't want a wall built because I don't think we need a wall. I don't think we should need a wall to protect us from mobs of poor people. I just don't. I mean, I'm saying that I don't think that is how we have to do that. I mean, a wall is 2,000 miles long. It's kind of ugly. Like, you know, it seems like an overreaction. It seems not necessary. However, you know, given that the current number of unauthorized border crossings the Border Patrol knows about is 210,000, and given that this means the real number is higher because some people they miss, what I want is for the number of unauthorized crossings the Border Patrol knows about is I would like that number to go down to zero. And I realize it won't go down to zero, so I'll set a goal of 5,000 a month or 50 a month or whatever, but the goal should be zero. You know, we should stop everybody when they try to cross the border and deal with them accordingly. And I don't mean deport every single person, because some of them will have valid asylum claims. And I would like it if we had those people wait in Mexico as those claims were evaluated. Or, you know, they can wait at home, too, if they want to call ahead instead of just fucking gate crashing. But, you know, I'm fine with some asylum seeking, but, you know, this endless, like, stream of people, no, I'm not okay with it. I'm not cool with it. And, like, I just need to be really clear. I don't want to just flip a switch and say, okay, all you people who came here illegally, or, I mean, who are coming here illegally, are now coming here legally. I'm not interested in that. I'm not interested in that. I don't. The pressures to emigrate, which means leave, should have not, like, you know, the pressures to emigrate to the United States should have zero to do with how many people we actually take in. The only thing I care about with a small carve-out for asylum seekers, the only thing I care about when it comes to immigration to the United States is what is best for us at any given time. You know, I mean, if we need computer programmers, we should tool the system to get them to immigrate here. If we need farmers or unskilled labor like apple pickers or, you know, people who clean bathrooms and stuff, that's what we need. Okay, let's rejigger that system. And that's how it should be every year. I mean, Immigration has always been one of our greatest strengths, and it's going to keep being that. Because listen, no matter what we do, the waiting list of people to come here, by waiting list I mean the people who want to come here, it's going to be long. Like, you know, if we close the border tighter than a nun's cooch for 2 straight years, when we reopened it, there would be 1 million people waiting, you know, because we're an attractive destination. So that's not going anywhere. Don't think just because we close it, we can't open it again at need. But close this how I want it. You know, I want to know who's coming in. I don't want to let somebody sit here for 3 years and mooch off of us and then get deported. And by the way, they get 90 days after their deportation hearing goes against them to be deported. And would you believe it? Within those 90 days, sometimes they don't show up for that deportation. Now listen, I think it should be 5 minutes. You say goodbye to the people who came to court with you, and we bust you right the fuck out of there. Gently and humanely, but home you go. Right as soon as that's done, we'll send a couple guys with you to pack your shit from your house and off to fucking Honduras you go. Wherever it was you came from, I don't really care. You know, and I want to do it nicely and gently and shit, but like, goodbye. And by the way, you know, because you snuck in here without permission, I want you at the bottom of the list. I want you at the bottom of the list, you know, in case we ever have, like, parole or amnesty or any of that. Or, like, when we open the thing back up, you're the last one coming. Because you fucking didn't listen to us when you came the first time. And that's just how I feel about that. So the point is, like, you may be able to imagine that I'm with the Republicans. Like, there's nothing the Republicans can ask for on this illegal immigration open borders issue that I wouldn't go for, unless it's separating parents from their children as a deterrent method to keep them from coming here. I don't want to do that. It punishes children for the sins of their parents in a way I don't like, and it's cruelty. It's cruelty without utility. I don't want to do that. I'm fine making the whole family not enterable. I mean, I'm fine if we just say to a family, no, you're not coming in. But if we allow a family and we keep it together, I think. I mean, within the law. So there's that. But other than that, you know, I'm good. I mean, get rid of parole. I want that gone. Triple the number of border agents, double the number of immigration judges, all this stuff. So anyway, I'm with the Republicans on this one, which is a gross thing to say, but I'm with them. I agree. Now, on the other hand, though, I am 100% with the president on the foreign aid request. Biden wants money for Israel. He wants money for Ukraine. Sorry about that. Sorry, my bad. My bad. Like I said, we run an unprofessional shop here. Now, so Biden wants money for Ukraine, for Israel, and for Taiwan. The money is a combination of humanitarian aid, but mostly military aid. The money for Taiwan is to arm them against a potential Chinese invasion. The money for Ukraine is to give them weapons so that they can keep fighting the Russians. And the money for Israel is to allow them to fight Hamas. I mean, now, let's get into this part of it. So, I'll take the easiest ones first. Ukraine is being invaded by Russia, which is just trying to eat them up, just trying to conquer them. Putin wants to reconstitute a larger Russia, and so he's attacking Ukraine to steal it. I think that's bad. I don't want that to happen, and so I want to arm Ukraine. I want to arm Ukraine just short of Putin thinking he has nothing to lose and shooting a nuclear missile off at us. It's a difficult balance to walk, but like, I'm in favor of giving Ukraine everything that we can to make them give Russia the toughest fight that they can. I mean, it's unclear whether Ukraine will win or lose. It's totally possible they'll lose, but I don't want them to lose because we didn't give them enough shit. I mean, the response that we've given to Ukraine has been, you know, maybe a C+ or a C-, like, but it's not great. It's not how we should have, we could have done much better. And don't get me started on the Europeans who have done... I could get started on that. It is my own podcast. But, like, don't get me started on the Europeans who have done even worse than we have. So I'm very much in favor of giving Ukraine every dollar we can pull together to give them. I'd give him $100 billion right now. Another 100. We've given him $105 billion so far. I'd just give him another $100 billion. You know, I'd ration it out, but shit. $200 billion? I mean, listen. We get to... this is like a Cold War's wet dream right here. Like, I mean, a Cold Warrior's wet dream. It's like, look, we are funding and we are in a proxy war with Russia using... Ukraine has been invaded. And we are funding Ukraine to fight Russia, so we get to bleed Russia at no cost to us except for dollars. You know, shit. Like, what are all the weapons for if not to use in this way? It's like we have these huge military stockpiles. Like, Russia is clearly our enemy and the enemy of all democratic societies, and we get to bleed them for free. I mean, as far as our blood is concerned. You know, it's a great opportunity for us. And, you know, it's also very just. Like, clearly what Russia did is horrible. And what we're doing is the right thing to do. And, like, we usually do the right thing. But a lot of times there's a lot of gray, a lot of shades of gray. And, by the way, usually is not always. So, but a lot of times there's shades of gray. And it's like, well, you know, we're doing this because of that and the other thing. And, like, if you look at it this way, it's the right thing to do. But there's, like, 8 levels of complexity to it. The Ukraine thing is pretty simple. One country is invading another one. And we're helping the smaller, weaker country that's being invaded, which is a democracy, being invaded by a dictatorship, fight off that dictatorship's invasion. Pretty simple. And we hate the fucking Russians. At least, you know, we should. So there's that. So I'm totally in favor of that. Now, Taiwan is a very similar situation. You know, the communist Chinese want to invade Taiwan because they believe that Taiwan is still part of China. The Taiwanese are a democracy, and a large majority of them don't want to be part of China again. So it's another Russia-Ukraine, except the Chinese are less drunk and more competent, as far as I can tell. And so, you know, arming Taiwan now, arming it to the teeth, is a wonderful idea because the war has not started yet. If we had done this with Ukraine, if we'd given Ukraine $200 billion in weaponry, you know, before Russia had invaded it, Russia probably would not have invaded it. I mean, Obama's response to Russia annexing Crimea was like a deeply disappointing thing. I liked Obama a lot, but, you know, he made some fucking horrendous calls, and that was one of them. So, I want to give Taiwan all the money that they're asking for. You know, and, like, this is the thing. It's like, you gotta pick, now I'm talking about, I guess, literally, and also spending money. Like, you gotta pick your battles as far as spending money goes. So it's like, you know, you might wonder, well, you're okay giving all this money to Israel and to Ukraine and to Taiwan, but you're not okay spending it on, like, you know, hordes of illegal immigrants who come in looking for charity. You're like, you're goddamn right. You know, that's right. Like, I am. I've made a funding decision, like, as far as what I would spend money on and what I don't want to spend money on. It goes like this. You know, it goes, first we help ourselves, and then we help our allies, and then, you know, when everything, then that's, those are my two high priorities, you know, us and our allies. And, like, I'm totally in favor. Like, you know, when there's an earthquake in Pakistan, for example, you know, go send the foreign aid. Make sure the Red Cross has supplies. Like, dude, that's just, like, the price to do it. That's, like, you know, we should do that. We have the money. We can do it at little cost. It's good PR. Like, it's an obligation that comes with being a superpower. Like we are. Like, these, it's an obligation that comes with being us. So I'm not totally against, like, foreign aid and stuff like that. but, like, you know, every dollar you spend in one place is a dollar you cannot spend somewhere else. Spending money is zero sum. So I am totally in favor of, you know, spending what it takes to help the Ukrainians against the Russians. And I am totally against spending any money to help all these illegal immigrants, you know, because... in one case, we're weakening an enemy, and in another case, we're just encouraging more illegal immigration. I don't want to do that second thing. So, and now we got to talk about the fucking big one, and that's Israel. I also support the aid for Israel. Now, I know this is very polarizing, and, you know, I think I understand the argument, the anti-Israel argument, which is like a lot of Palestinians are dying in Israel's war with Hamas. It's about 20,000 right now, give or take 1,000, somewhere like that. And Israel has just fucked the Gaza Strip up. I get that. I know. It's too bad. But, you know, that's why you don't elect a terrorist government, and then you don't depose it, and then you let it go to war with Israel. I mean, that's what happens when that happens. I think Israel is the only liberal democracy in the Middle East. It's the only Western-style democracy in the Middle East. It's the only place where there are gay pride parades and women's rights, and, like, they win a lot of Nobel Prizes, and they are, like, you know, a huge startup economy. They're like a modern, real first-world country in the middle of just insanity. I mean, Israel and Saudi Arabia, for example, are both rich. They both have money, but the Saudis are still like 200 years behind the times. They have a king, and like he is like the real authority there. There's like deep gender segregation. They're like it's like a very strict version of Islam is practiced in Saudi Arabia that tramples the shit out of the human rights of the citizens of Saudi Arabia. So money isn't what I'm talking about. I'm talking about ideology as well. I think the Jews took their little piece of land they got in 48 and, you know, some of what they got in 67 and they built a really good country. They took the time and the effort to build this cool place. The education is good there. You know, I mean, I could keep going on, but I hope you get my general point. Now, the people opposing Israel are Hamas. I mean, first of all, they want to, like, kill all the Jews. That's basically their platform. May have been slightly modified recently, but, like, they're trying to, like, wipe Israel off the map, and they just can't. Like, that's the reason it hasn't happened. And, like, you know, there are no gay pride parades in Gaza. In Gaza, the unemployment rate is about 48 or 52%, okay? That's the people who don't have jobs. Now, the employment rate for women, that's the amount of women, the percentage of women who do have jobs, is 14%. That's just because it's a Muslim country. I mean, you know, women don't work, men work. So, I mean, the employment rate for men, if the employment rate for women is 14%, and the total unemployment rate is about 50%, the employment rate for men is way higher. So the employment rate in general is low because women don't work, because it's a Muslim theocracy in Gaza. And, like, you know, I don't like those. And I also know for a fact that if a Mexican cartel attacked the United States in the way Israel attacked Hamas, just in case you somehow don't know, Hamas did like a raid into Israel, slaughtered 1,200 civilians and kidnapped about 250 hostages. If the Mexican cartel or the Mexican government did that to the United States, we would be so pissed and we would go fuck them up. It's a questionable proposition whether or not the Mexican government, as constituted the day before that happened, would exist 3 months after that happened. We might just tell them that we were running their shit because they couldn't handle it. I mean, and if it was a cartel that did it, we would destroy that cartel. We would destroy that cartel. I mean, we'd kill them. Literally, I'm saying we would kill them. Like, we would do what Israel is doing. We would be so pissed. And I don't just mean the like, you know, rock-ribbed conservatives would be pissed. Everybody would be pissed. And so I recognize that, like, we would do that. We would do something like that. I mean, any nation with any self-respect, I mean, if Britain got hit like that, or France, or Japan, or South Korea, you know, if Canada did, any nation that has the ability to stop to fight when they get hit like that is going to do that, and that's what Israel is doing. That being said, I wish they would be a little more careful in their operations to kill fewer civilians. But I'm also not a general. I'm not there. So I'm really giving them the benefit of the doubt on this. Like, I feel like, you know, they just got attacked. They have to stop. They have to do whatever they need to do to make sure that doesn't happen again. And they're a democracy, so there's a thousand things they could have done. I mean, they could have opened a two-state solution negotiation right after that happened. They could have said, listen, we understand that you're pissed. You just killed 1,200 of our people, and you've taken some hostages. You know, in exchange, give us our hostages back and promise not to do this again, and in exchange, we'll give you a state. They could have done that. They're a democracy. They didn't do that. They chose not to do that. So, I mean, this is a democracy fighting a dictatorship. Hamas is not a democracy. It was elected and then, surprise, surprise, stole power in a civil war. By the way, fought with other authoritarians. And in the 16 years since that happened, the people of Gaza decided every day of those 16 years not to depose that government. It has to be said that, in my opinion, a people are responsible for the government they have. I mean that if Donald Trump had launched a nuclear weapon at some country, and the other great powers in the world had said, that's enough, we're going to try and go to war with the United States and dismantle it because such a breach of international ethics is unacceptable to us, they would not have said, as they went to war, hey, listen, we're going to shoot you in this military operation. Did you guys vote for Donald Trump or not? They would have held America responsible for the actions its government took, and they would respond to the United States as though it was one entity. In the same way that, like, you know, when we went to war with Germany in World War II, we killed people who voted against Hitler, assuredly, because that's just how this shit goes. So, I mean, that's how I feel about Gaza. Is Hamas... is the government of Gaza, you know, and, like, the people of Gaza are responsible for the actions of Hamas in the same way the people of China are responsible for that government's actions, or the people of Britain are responsible for that government's actions, or the people of Saudi Arabia are responsible for that government's actions. The level of responsibility increases or decreases based on how democratic the government is. The Swiss are more responsible for the actions of their government than the Eritreans are. But the principle still holds. It's like, you know, if Eritrea goes to war and another country does not like that, you know, they'll fight the country Eritrea. And, well, Gaza is not a country. It is a quasi-state. It is a thing. It's an entity. And it went to war with Israel. I mean, now it's suffering the consequences of that. And I say that with no pleasure. Like, the thing is, you know, it was stupid, in a conventional sense, for Hamas to go to war with Israel, because what was going to happen was pretty much guaranteed to be what's happening right now, which is basically, in its efforts to destroy Hamas, Israel is slaughtering Palestinian civilians. I mean, the collateral damage is nuts. It's a fair bet to say that for every one Hamas member that has been killed, three civilians have been killed. I don't think that's too much of a reach. And if it is, two isn't. You know, one to two, one to three. High, high collateral damage. But, like, that's how the cookie crumbles. You know, that's why you don't start that war. And, like, that's why you don't allow a government that will start that war to stay there. Now, I know that a lot of you are going to say, like, but Israel can't depose Hamas. The people of Gaza can't depose Hamas because if they try to do that, they're going to be killed. Like Hamas is going to kill a bunch of people when they try to depose them. And it's like, my question to you is, like, would Hamas have killed this many people, 20,000 people? I mean, and the war's not over. Would deposing Hamas have cost the Gazans as many lives as this war is now costing them? I think that's a fairly open question, and my gut says, hell no. No way, you know. But, you know, they didn't do that. And so they live with the consequences that their government has done for them. Now, I need to say something else here on this Israel situation. A lot of you, and I'm one of them, favor some type of two-state solution. By the way, my two-state solution is easy. Mine is give the Palestinians Gaza and recognize that and that alone as the state of Palestine. Do it without asking. Just give it to them and walk the fuck away. I mean, in Israel in coordination with, say, the U.S. and our partners who will go along with such a thing. Maybe the Brits, maybe, oh, I don't know, whoever we can get to fucking back it. But anyway, I favor a two-state solution, but I am highly skeptical of such a thing if you're telling me that the people of Gaza can't control the government they put in place. If you're telling me, like, well, Hamas took power and we can't, the people of that state just can't remove them. I'm like, these are the people you want to give a country to? The people who can't control what their government is? No. I don't want to do that because I know what I'm going to get. I'm going to get Hamas. I'm going to get Gaza, Hamas, ISIS state. You know, that's the state I would get. And like the Palestinian Authority isn't much better. They pay blood money to the people who go suicide bombing in Israel. And they're also authoritarians. They're not a democratic government, like, which is the main thing I care about. Israel is a democracy. It's half the reason I back it. Israel is an industrious, liberal democracy, Western style. I mean, so I back it. I back democracies against dictatorships. Hamas is a dictatorship. You know, it's not that complicated. Hamas isn't Singapore. That's the other thing. Singapore is not exactly a dictatorship, but it's like a weird, it's like half authoritarian. It has like a democracy, but I mean, it has more checks than, more checks than checks mix. I mean, it has wrapped around with checks, like, and it kind of had, there's elements of enlightened despotism about how Singapore works. But like, they're human, they're good. I mean, like, but they're, as far as that goes, that they're the best version of that. Like, if you had to live in a dictatorship, you'd want to live in Singapore. So Gaza isn't Singapore either. And so, like, I'm fine with what Israel's doing. I wish they would kill fewer civilians, but I don't think we're in a position to get that from them. Because the only check we have on Israel, the only thing we can do to control its behavior short of war or, you know, sanctions, is not give it aid in the form of weapons and money. And the problem with that is it sends this miserable signal out to the rest of the world because, you see, in the same way that we are in a proxy war with the Russians over Ukraine. Like, you know, we are backing Ukraine. Russia's trying to invade Ukraine. Therefore, like, you know, we're in a proxy war with Russia. Because if we hadn't been arming Ukraine, Russia would have already won. So we are the reason, in addition to the extreme bravery shown and tenacity shown by the men and women of the Ukrainian military, we are the reason, we being the West and those who donate money, so like Japan as well and stuff, we're the reason that Ukraine has not lost. That's a proxy war with Russia. Now, at the same time, in reverse, Iran is in a proxy war with Israel, and by extension, you know, us, using Hamas and its associated groups as its proxies. Like, you know, Lebanon as its proxy, and like various little like Muslim militia groups, paramilitaries as its proxies, like the Houthis. Is it Houthis or Houthis? I don't know. But anyway, so if we say to Israel, hey, you know, you're killing too many Gazans, we're not going to give you any more money. What Iran sees is, hey, we're not backing Israel. Like, we're not backing our ally. And Iran goes, oh, great. You know, they're a bunch of, like, they're like, you know, when the going gets tough, they just stop funding these people. Great. Like, cool. Let's keep shooting missiles at Israel. Iran is going to fund Hamas. Iran won't stop doing that because, you know, Hamas accidentally killed a couple civilians. Hamas kills civilians on purpose. I mean, that's another key difference here for me is Israel is fighting a war against Hamas, attempting to kill Hamas. And as an indirect result of that, Israel is killing civilians. They're like, you know, they're casualties of war. Hamas deliberately set out to slaughter civilians, you know, as its mode of operation. And so, yeah, now, obviously this is hugely polarizing. This is what I started the show talking about. It's like, you know, when you state an opinion, now you have certain opinions, they split right down the middle. Like, I mean, if anyone has made it this far and disagrees with me about some of the stuff I'm saying here, it's like, you know, you probably hold opinions far away from mine. And, like, this is the thing that's so important, though, is, like, it's important to talk about what you think and why you think it. And like, if people yell at you, you know, I mean, listen, I get pretty vehement when I'm arguing sometimes. I mean, I'll be like, well, you know, you hippies, what do you think about? What are you talking about? You know, like, you want an immediate ceasefire in Israel now? Like, Hamas isn't going to respect that ceasefire, so Israel's going to stop shooting people, and Hamas is just going to blow some fucking chick's head off as soon as they can, because that's what they are. They're like terrorist government. It's inane to expect Israel to, like, unilaterally stop fighting when Hamas won't. That's just stupid. Israel should try and kill Hamas until it totally runs out of all international support. I mean, that's what we would do. And I'm not going to hold Israel to an unrealistic standard. So the point is, like, people get vehement when they have opposing opinions, you know. But, like, the other people's vehemence and engagement should not be a reason that you fail to state your opinions. Because, you know, when you don't, you're just now not part of the conversation. That's all you're doing. And, like, you know, maybe your opinion persuades somebody of something or makes them look at something in a different light. Or, you know, maybe you're just representing your opinion. Like, you know, there are plenty of opinions, I'm sure, that are silent but popular. You know, people have opinions, they don't want to say them. And so the whole public discourse is twisted because there's this silent group of people who, I'm not using this in a Reagan way, but like a Nixon way, but like a silent majority. So it's like, you know, 71% of people really like sweet tarts, but nobody says that. So, you know, they stop selling them. As a very bad example. So, to bring it all the way back, so there's this bill in the Congress right now. It's in negotiations. The negotiation is border tightening on the southern border in exchange for foreign aid, as I described. And what I really want is everything. I want it all. I want what Biden wants, and I want the Republican thing, too. I want him to go big. I want him to go big, big on negotiations. I am rubbing my hands together in glee, just like that. I'm rubbing my hands together in glee, thinking that if this bill passes, I get exactly what I want. I get a closed southern border. Yes, thank you. And I get to fund Ukraine and fund Israel and fund Taiwan at high levels. It's like, it's exactly what I want. I want both those things to happen. I would drink a glass of fucking bubbly if this bill passed. I hope it passes. Now, there are hippies on the left and morons on the right, you know, who don't want it to pass. There are, like, progressive Democrats who are like, oh, humanitarian parole, no. I mean, like, hang on, let me do a better job, hang on. There are progressive Democrats who think mostly about the conditions of the people arriving and just want us to be a homeless shelter charity for anybody who can walk here. It's like, if you've made it here, you get to stay because we feel bad for you, that you couldn't help maintain a country where you were, and so you can stay here. Your country's all fucked up. Come on, the more the merrier. And, you know, I get it. I know that was just a highly mocking version of that argument, but, like, I get the argument. It's like, you know, they feel bad. Bunch of poor people who walk like 1,500, I mean, now I'm being literal, who walk like 1,500 miles through a jungle, you know, with, like, a fucking backpack and, like, shitty sandals, like, fucking, you know, paid some coyote to fucking smuggle them to the southern border. And these people on the left, these humanitarians, just feel bad for those people and want to let them in. That's nice. It's real nice. I don't want to do that. We've let enough in. I've had enough. We've had enough. We have enough of them. Just in the last year, we've let a million in. That's enough for me. I'm good. I'm cool. I'm cool. I don't think we need any more of these people. And if we do, they're still going to be here. That's the thing. Is if in 8 months we change our minds for some reason, they're like, damn, what we really need are more poor people. Guess what? They will still be wanting to come here. So we can always change our minds. It's not like we, like, you know, but a nice breather might be, I mean, a nice breather is what I want. Let's give it a couple years, you know? And, by the way, we're still naturalizing over a million citizens a year, which is what I want. I want that too. You see, I'm not against immigration. I'm very pro-immigrant. I'm just anti-illegal immigrant. I don't want that. You know, hey, you want to ask for asylum? Do it from home. We'll let you know. You don't have to walk here. I don't want the tax dollars of this country going to support that shit. Now, at the same time, there are idiots on the right who are just think that funding this Ukraine war is none of our business. Why they think funding Israel is important if funding Ukraine isn't is beyond me, unless it's just the biblical end times prophecy thing. But it's weird. So a lot of people on the right are cool funding Taiwan because they don't like the communist Chinese. I'm right there with them. Neither do I. And they're cool funding Israel because they like the Jews. I'm right there with them too. I like the Jewish people too. The Jews are great. Like, I mean, look at what a great country they built with Israel. I mean, the Jews are like have always been a. I mean, if you can say there are good ethnic groups, you know, like if that's a meaningful statement. I mean, if that's like a statistically meaningful thing to say, then the Jews are great people. I like the Jews as well. But the people on the right have a thing about they don't want to fund Ukraine, you know, against Russia. And I don't know if it's because Trump was sucking Vladimir Putin's dick for so long that some of these people have, like, reflexive Russia dick-sucking sympathy. I don't know what the deal is. I don't swim in those circles. I don't know if it's just stupid isolationism, which is just going to cost us more in the long run. But they're wrong, too. They're wrong. Like, listen, if I knew for a fact that Russia would not do anything other than take Ukraine, I would still very much want to support Ukraine for the same reasons I've already explained. I like supporting democracies against dictatorships whenever it's feasible. However, it would be a different discussion if I knew that for a fact as though God had told me. But, I don't think the Russians will stop if they manage to take Ukraine. The Russians will say to themselves, look how hard the West fought against Ukraine, against our conquest of Ukraine. And before we even finished it, they got tired and stopped funding it. So now we're going to take Moldova because it's smaller than Ukraine. It won't be any harder. And they're right. They would be right. So if you want to stop this guy, you stop him in Ukraine. You don't wait for him to take Ukraine and stop him when he's trying to do something else, you know. That should be a lesson we all have learned by now from history. There are people on the right who are stupid too, you know. Ron DeSantis, who is a guy running for the Republican nomination, has said he wants to shoot immigrants stone cold dead coming across the southern border, and that's insanity. That's crazy. I would much rather a million illegal immigrants in the country than to shoot 10,000 of them if I was forced into a choice on it. I've lost the thread. I got so riled up that I lost the thread. Let me see if I can pull it together. I can pull it together. Spectacular. The negotiations may fail because of people on the left and the right. Ugh, gross. I hope they don't. I mean, if we can get the center, which is maybe 70 senators, to agree on this big bill, I will get everything I want. I will get huge amounts of foreign aid to the allies I want to support, and I will get a solid reform of our southern border, a crackdown on all this nuts immigration. All right. So, and like, by the way, if by some miracle you disagree with my opinions, and you've made it this far, as I've ranted about them in a hopefully vaguely coherent, but probably not coherent way. If you've made it this far, look, and you oppose my opinions, you disagree with them, go state your opinion somewhere. That's the thing. That's why it's important, because I'm going to keep talking about mine, you know? And, like, normally I don't want to make every show, like, a two-hour-long rant about a subject with no guest. I hate that, because I feel so, like, ranty and ravey, and there's nobody here to be like, but what about this, or what about that, or what do you, there's nobody here to clarify and argue and push back and stuff, but I was just so struck by the reactions of my friends, who, for various reasons, didn't want to come on the show because about opinions, you know. I just wanted to state some strong opinions, especially because I was worried I might not want to, you know, and I have now. And I feel good. I mean, I feel fine with those opinions. Like, pull a soundbite up, you can get a kind of ugly, strongly phrased bit. But, like, no, I stand by these opinions. You know, so if you have different opinions, that's good. You should go say them. And now, there's one other thing I want to do. The last thing I want to do is, The last thing I want to do is I have a couple would-you-rather questions that I had my, you know, fucking BFF ChatGPT write down for me. I haven't seen them yet, and I just want to run through them pretty quick. I did this because these are more opinions. It's just more shit about the theme of opinions. So let's see. I'm saying that these are more opinions I can express. Would I rather have the ability to fly or be invisible? Well, I'm blind, so let's see. They both actually suck, because, you know, flying, I'm just going to hit stuff like a fucking retarded bird. And, like, being invisible is kind of difficult, too, because, like, I can't see what somebody's doing, so it's like I'm standing in somewhere, like, trying to, like, I can't, it's not like I can watch you when I'm invisible. I mean, like, I could easily, like, you know, just accidentally bump into somebody invisible. So they both suck. They both suck, but I guess if pressed to choose, I'll take flight, although it's a limited power for me. Would I rather never use social media again or never watch another movie or TV show? Oh, that's an easy one. Fuck social media. Social media is... I'm getting less and less cool with social media as I think about it more. It's like... I think it's probably a net negative for society, social media. Unless this podcast counts. That's a debatable. That's a gray area. I mean, if podcasts count as social media... But if it's like Instagram, TikTok, Twitter, all that shit, I mean X, sorry. I mean X, formerly known as Twitter, Meta, you know, all that, like whatever. Fuck that. Nah, I don't need that. Definitely I'll take the TV and movies over social media. Would I rather always be 10 minutes late or always 20 minutes early? Certainly 20 minutes early, 100%. I think being early is way better than being late. I think it shows a great deal of respect. I think it sends the right impression out, you know? Being late is bad times. Bad times. Doesn't send the right impression. Doesn't send the right message. You know, your guy, the guy who's always late. I'd rather be the guy, oh, he's always on time. He's always even early. He's always 20 minutes early to everything. 100%. Gives you some time to get yourself in the right headspace for whatever you're doing. So always 20 minutes early. I can read a book. Would I rather live without music or without books? I love music. I used to rap. But I love books 20 times more than I love music. Books are fucking the greatest. So I'd rather live without music. Would I rather never eat my favorite food again or only eat my favorite food? Well, I worry that my favorite food would become not my favorite food if I only ate it forever. Although pho is pretty great. But given that, I'd rather never eat it again because I have about 8,000 second favorite foods. So... I mean, food is the greatest, so I'm cool losing one thing. And, yeah, I'm cool losing one thing. Let's see. Would I rather give up my smartphone for a month or give up bathing for a week? I'll give up bathing for a week. I'll just stay isolated and look at things on my smartphone. Would I rather lose all my money and valuables or all the pictures I've ever taken? All the pictures. Fuck, I'll lose all the pictures. Would I rather live in a utopia as a normal person or in a dystopia as the supreme ruler? Well, listen, I'm not going to lie about it. Being the supreme ruler is hugely tempting. But I don't see the utility in ruling a dystopia. What's the point? Like, I would just want to make it into a utopia. So I'd rather be a normal person in a utopia. Although, if there's a third choice, could I rule a utopia? Anyway. Would I rather know how I'll die or when I'll die? Oh, man. Huh. I don't want to know when I'll die. I don't think I want to know when I'll die. I think that would ruin the time I had left. What if it was tomorrow or 2 years from now? But I guess I'd rather know how I'll die. But that's still haunting. But yeah, I'd rather know how than when. Would I rather have the power to gently influence someone else's decisions or have complete control over my own emotions? You know, I don't know what the term gently influences means. So, and like, I think that having complete control over your own emotions, I don't know what that means either, but I think that's such a elusive thing for people. I would definitely rather have complete control over my own emotions than to be able to gently influence people's decisions. I don't really know what that means. What, is it like 3% more likely they'll do what I want? So I'll take the self-control thing. Would I rather be able to change one decision I make every day or be able to undo one decision I make in the past week? I'll take the past week thing. I'd rather be able to, like, reflect upon a decision over a week and change it because it was bad than have to do that on a daily basis. Because I think the time gives you a greater idea of what decision may have been good or poor. Would I rather never be able to speak again or always have to say everything that's on my mind? The second one. That's easy. Would I rather have to face my biggest fear once or live with a minor annoyance for the rest of my life? Well, I'm blind, so that's what I'm doing anyway. So the second one. Would I rather have a life-changing secret revealed to the world or reveal everyone else's secrets but never know my own? I'm only pausing because sometimes ChatGPT, like, this is the issue I still have with large language models anyway, is they come out with prose that if you just skim read it, like, seems like it makes sense, but it doesn't. So how could I have a secret I don't know about? What am I, like, secretly Batman, but I don't know? But anyway, I'd rather my own secret revealed. Like, assuming that that might be useful to me. Like, if I don't know it, I'd rather have it publicly revealed, but I know it. Like, I'm assuming that I don't know it when it isn't revealed, just the way the question was phrased. You know, because it says, would I rather have my secret revealed to the world or reveal everybody else's secrets but never know my own secret? So I'd rather the thing about me be public. And hopefully it's a secret that even when it is public still benefits me. All right. What? Hang on. Would I rather be remembered? Would you rather be remembered for something you didn't do or be forgotten? Oh, I see. Would you rather be remembered for something you didn't do or forgotten but have accomplished great things? I see. So, like, would I rather... definitely forgotten and have accomplished great things. I'll be dead. I'll have known. Good enough. Yeah. So, I mean, the question confused me. So it's, would you rather be remembered for something you did not do? As in, like, they think you built a utopia, but you never did. But they think it was you who did it. Or forgotten having done great things. I'd rather be forgotten having done the great things. I'll know I did it until I'm dead. Great. All right. I have 7 more. Would I rather live in a world where everybody's thoughts are displayed above their head or live in a world where everybody's emotions are color-coded into their aura? Assuming that this is like a blind, accessible question, I'd rather know what people are thinking than what they're feeling. Would I rather have the ability to speak all foreign languages fluently, or would I rather be able to communicate with animals? Huh. That's a tough one. I'll take the foreign languages. I don't know what a dolphin would have to say I'd want to hear. I mean, like, stop polluting the ocean. Stop polluting the ocean. Like, I know, buddy. We're sorry about that. You know. I mean, it would be great to talk to animals, but, like, to know every foreign language would be pretty great, too. So I'll take the languages. Would I rather be able to travel anywhere in the world I wanted to instantly, but never be able to stay more than 48 hours? Or would I rather only be able to travel 100 miles from where I was, but have a perfect home? That is a tough one. Huh. I do love home. But I think I'll take the travel, because just, like, there's so many diverse experiences you could have. You could be everywhere. You could, I mean, you know, and, like, the Four Seasons isn't too shabby. I could have a good home where I stayed. You know, hotel hop. I think that'd be fine. Okay. Would I rather have $200 million tax-free or restart my life from the age of 15 with all the knowledge I have now? 100% I'll take the second one. I made a lot of fucking miserably bad decisions I could fix. Would I rather live a life where I feel no pain and no pleasure, or a life where I feel intense pain and intense pleasure? The second one, definitely. The first one isn't living at all. It's just nothing. Would I rather know all the mysteries of the universe but be able to share none of that knowledge? Or would I rather live in ignorance and inspire others to make great discoveries? Apparently, like, I'm assuming I wouldn't get to know them. Shit. I don't know. That's a tough one, because if you can't share knowledge, what's the point in having it? It's like, Jack likes Stacy, but I can't tell anyone. On a much larger scale? You know what? I'll take the ignorance, because it'll inspire people. I mean, I'll take the ignorance, because the net benefit to humanity will be huge, even without my knowledge. I mean, I don't have to know it to, like, I don't have to know the knowledge, but people will benefit from the knowledge. So I'll take that I'll take the ignorance. Would I rather have the power to heal other people with a touch but experience their pain for a day, or would I rather be immune to all diseases but be unable to heal others? Fuck, I don't know. Fuck, these are getting hard now. I do hate death and would love to live forever, but then all my friends are going to die, and my family, and I'll be like, God damn it, I can't fix them. I don't know. Fuck. I mean, when I'm dead, I can't heal anyone. And everybody's going to be like, oh, fix this. I'll take the fucking immortality. I'm immune to all diseases but can't heal other people. You know, medical technology is coming a long way pretty quick, so everybody's going to be fine. Now, all right, everybody. I'm tapped out. I'm tapping out. That's it. Tapping out. That's the show. That's the show, everybody. Thanks so much for being here. Hope you enjoyed it. Good times, everybody. Peace.